I'm an addict. My name's Sarah. Man, I'm grateful to be clean today. Who in here is grateful to be clean? All right, man. I want to give a round of applause, another one, for all the speakers that shared about H&I, the do's and don'ts that came up here and taught us a lot. And I want to thank the Hackney Committee. I want to thank everyone that was on the Hackney Committee, and thank you for allowing me to share my experience, my strength, and my hope through the H&I process. We talk about it's an awakening of the spirit, right? 12th step. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to addicts and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. So 12th step bridges really, really closely with the fifth tradition, right? 12th step, fifth tradition, they're bridged. There's something in the fifth tradition in the Guiding Principles book. I've read it before. I'm going to read it again. I absolutely love it. I absolutely love it. And I believe that it's got a lot to do with what we're talking about and sharing here today. It says, the fifth tradition restores purpose to our lives. Carrying a simple message to suffering addicts. In service to that purpose, we reach out. We start and support meetings. We walk our talk, work steps, sponsor, care, and share. Our passion for recovery is a constant source of gratitude. When one addict gets clean, we don't stop. We keep reaching out. When 100 or 1,000 or 10,000 addicts get clean, we don't stop. There's always an addict who's dying to hear the NA message. And for me, I was that addict that was dying to hear the NA message that was behind the walls. If somebody hadn't carried a Narcotics Anonymous message into the prisons where I was serving my last sentence, I don't know that I'd be here today. Because I was on a road to destruction, dereliction, demoralization, death. Through the process of getting a sponsor, working the steps, my spirit has awakened. I like how the speaker last night talked about, he said, I'm going to share about two different people, right? And he was talking about the one that was like homeless under the bridge, death and dying. And then this other addict that's like got his shit together, right? And he's like, some people wouldn't think those are the same person. But the crazy thing about this program is that that is the same person, right? Like, we get to come from death and dying to hope. Last night I got to see one of the women that carried the message into the facility I was at, right? She walked by me and I grabbed her from behind and I looked at her and I said, I love you. And she turned around and she said, I love you so much. All I could think is like, thank you for sharing that life-saving message, right? I stand here today, clean date, January 21st of 2010, right? I got arrested for the last time on January 20th of 2010 in Victoria County, right? And I remember thinking, I got arrested for $91 worth of theft, right? Like, I was like, I'll be out in a few days. And when they came, the court-appointed attorney showed up and said, okay, they're offering you 8 years TDC. I was like, bitch, what? Like, I'm here for $91 worth of theft. He said, well, here's the thing. You've been arrested in Wisconsin, Chicago, Dallas, Denton, Houston, Victoria. Do I need to go on? And I was like, well, I mean, so I don't know what happened. I'm going to call it God's grace, and I'm going to call it God's mercy, right? I ended up with a 15-month state jail sentence. So the last time I did time, I was in a state jail facility. And we talk about that, right? Brandon G. said, God's grace, God's mercy, two different things, right? And mercy was the fact that I didn't get what I deserved. Because I did. I mean, I had been arrested everywhere. And so when I arrived to the unit, they put me in a drug program. So anyways, the third time I'd ever been to prison, they offered me a drug program, and I told them I didn't have a drug problem. They just had a problem with the way I used. But by the time I got there this time and they offered me the drug program, there was a sense of relief, right? There was a sense of relief. And the great thing about it was the counselor that did that drug program was a member of Narcotics Anonymous, and his home group was alive and kicking. And so he carried a clean, clear message of Narcotics Anonymous, and he offered a lot of hope. But these other people would come in on Tuesdays on an H&I panel, right? And I'm not going to lie. At first, I just went there to get some air conditioning. But eventually, through the time of me showing up and going there, the woman that I saw last night, she was sharing about having she had 17 years clean, and here I am sitting there with a few months clean, right? And she shared about the last day she used, right? I don't know about you, but at the beginning, to me, when I had 30, 60, 90 days, 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, somebody with 17 years clean was like an anomaly. Like, what is 17 years clean? Like, right? And I hadn't even gotten out of prison yet. So I'm thinking like, okay, I'm doing good in here, but, you know. But the thing that I could connect with when she shared was the pain of the last day she used, right? She talked about what it felt like to have to do the things she had to do to get another hit of dope. She talked about using for that very last time. And man, I connected to her, right? And I remember talking to her after she shared. I was telling her a little bit about myself. And one of the things she said to me later on, I don't know if it was that day or a few weeks later, but she told me, hey, come over here, I want to tell you something. I said, yeah. She said, you know that guy you keep calling your boyfriend? Yes. Honey, that's your trick. And until you get honest and stop rationalizing and justifying your behaviors while you're behind the walls, you're still sick. It's an inside job, and the disease lives inside of you. I didn't want to be in prison without commissary. I was like, that's my boyfriend. I love him. See, he's going to buy me a car and he's got a house. And so when I get out, I'm going to be okay. Right? Because he's going to offer me stability. Let me back up just a little bit. My second husband, I married him and his wife and his three kids pulled up to me while I was on the road tricking, right? And I had been their friend. Well, they had been my fence for a long time. I'd stolen stuff and sold it to them. And so they said, Sarita, you marry Mario, right? He gets papers. You get a car. You can live with us. So see, I had already married someone for a vehicle and a safe place to live. And let me tell you what, it didn't work, right? Because that was my third time coming home from prison, and I went back two more times, okay? So that's that, like, that delusional thinking, right? Like, I was caught in the illusion that if I did it one more time, this time it was going to be different, right? And I did, you know, I listened to her. She would tell me a lot of things, and I really didn't like her when she told them to me, but the truth, it stuck, right? It stuck, and I would go back to my bunk, and I never did let that man go, right? I let him pick me up. I sent him all the things that I wanted, my coach, perfume, my my iPhone, all these things, right? But the other thing she told me, she said, Sarah, when you get out of here, and Teresa said it, and I think some of the other ones said, run to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. Don't go by the hood. Don't go somewhere and let them see how good you look, right? Run to an NA meeting. And that woman met me at that NA meeting, right? That's what she did. She never gave me her phone number. She never gave me her address. But what she said, I'll be at that NA meeting. And if you show up, I'll be there. And when I got there, she was there, right? And I've been going to Narcotics Anonymous meetings ever since. Because carrying the message is what matters. So when I got out, I knew that H and I had saved my life. I knew that there was H and I soldiers and that I needed to get involved. I lived in a small town in Victoria. And here's the other thing, right? NA had been brought into the county jail in Victoria, but because there were things like people didn't show up on the night that they were supposed to be there, they were only allowing AA to go into the county jail, and they didn't know that they wanted NA to come back in because they hadn't been so consistent. There really wasn't any place in Victoria to do an H&I message. I have eight felonies, 29 arrests, so I was trying to get into a facility there that was like a halfway house where people come out of prison, right? And because of my background, I had to go through all this stuff. I never did end up getting an H&I message in there, but I tried and I worked hard at it for about a year and a half. So what I did is I took my happy ass down to Corpus Christi, right? It was about an hour and 25 minute drive, and I would go to the facilities in Corpus Christi because, man, I knew that I needed to carry this message. And so you know what happened? I started showing up in the Cabana area. And I started developing friendships with people. And I have those friendships today, right? I may not talk to them on the phone every day, but the moment I see them, man, it is like this love, right? Like this love that we have in this fellowship, you know? And so they taught me how to carry an H&I message, right? The do's and the don'ts. Look at the pamphlet, read it. You know what I mean? It's in black and white. We think in ink, right? Don't get confused. Don't get twisted. Carry a clean Narcotics Anonymous message. So I kept going and going and going, right? Saturday nights, I'm going out to detox. Friday nights, I'm going out to this other facility. And I start sponsoring people at this other facility. It's a 9-month-long facility. And eventually, people in the Cabana area, because Victoria's part of the Cabana, said, hey, look, you're so involved in H&I, we're going to do every other month the H&I, what the hell is that called? Subcommittee, thank you. We're going to come to Victoria every other month because you're so involved, Sarah. Man, I love that. You know what I mean? Like, that's the unity of this fellowship, unity of this program, right? I just kept getting more and more involved. And then I thought, you know what? I really want to go back to the facility where I last served. Like, I really want to go there. How do I get involved? So I reached out and I found people in the Houston area, right, that were going to this facility. And the lady that I met there when I did that is here sitting in the front row. And I'm going to tell you what, man, I was so nervous going in there, right? The big door shuts and I'm like, oh, shit, you know, because... And it was crazy, too, because there was still some of the guards that were there, right? But I looked so different, they didn't even recognize me. And you know what? I didn't want to have to say, like, oh, hey, I'm so-and-so. I just was like, this is so cool. I can walk in here with dignity and grace, and I don't even have to let them know who I am today, right? Because that's not the purpose. The purpose that I was there was to carry a message to the still-suffering addict. But I think my emotions got the best of me. I probably cussed a little too much, like weren't supposed to cuss at all. And so politely afterwards, this lady took me to the side and she said, sometimes when we leave those things out, the message can be heard more clear, right? The Narcotics Anonymous message in the literature doesn't need to be said with 100 F-bombs, you know what I mean? Like, it's good enough on its own. She probably didn't say it quite like that, but I really got what she was trying to tell me, and I really appreciated it, you know? There was a facility in Three Rivers, and I really wanted to carry the message into the federal penitentiary, right? I already told you I got a lot of felonies, so when I got there, it was Esperanza area and Cabana. Like, we split weekends, right? Cabana would go, Esperanza would go, and so when I went to go do the, I'm losing my words, orientation, thank you. I went to go do orientation that day, and there was a lot of people there from Esperanza, and here's the other thing I was taught. The broader the base, the higher the point of freedom, right? So, man, I knew people in the Esperanza area. I had been traveling. I had been going to meetings outside of Victoria, Texas for a long time, right? And so when I got there, there's another gentleman sitting here in the front row that was there that day that we did orientation, right? And there was a bunch of us. And I was there all day. I think it was like this 8-hour-long orientation. And at the very end, they pulled me to the side and said, "Your background came back, and you're not going to be allowed to carry a message into this facility." And I was devastated. How could I get into the TDCJ facility, but I couldn't get into the federal beds? I'd never done beds time. I didn't understand what was happening. I didn't give up. I pursued trying to get into that facility for 3.5 years. And eventually, a sponsee of mine, she was my friend at the time, she's my sponsee today, said, "Look, they have an appreciation for the volunteers, and I'm going to have you come to the dinner so you can go talk to the warden." And that's exactly what I did, right? I went to that appreciation dinner, and I pulled the warden to the side, and I told him, "Man, I've been trying to get in here for 3.5 years. I want to carry a message to the addicts in here." And within a month, I was able to go into that facility. I was able to carry a message in there for 2 years before we moved. I loved it. I loved going in there. Those guys were thirsty. There's always an addict dying to hear the Narcotics Anonymous message. We moved to Houston, and immediately I got involved in H&I. I have a friend of mine that he lives in the Hill Country now, but he was in Houston area, and I've been friends with him for a while. So he said, "Hey, why don't you and your husband come meet me at this facility where I do H&I?" I said, "Okay." So we head over there on a Thursday night, and we meet him. And it's an adolescent treatment facility, right? So there was a lot going on in that room, right? And not a lot of people paying attention. And I was getting very frustrated, right? I was like, "I don't think I'll ever come back here. One time is enough for me, okay? I did it. I showed up. This isn't my niche." And we're leaving the facility, and I'm walking down the hall, and on the left side, there's a 13-year-old girl. And she says, "Psst, psst, can you come over here? I want to talk to you." I was like, "Sure." She said, "I don't want any of the other people to know that I'm talking to you." She says, "It's not cool to get clean in a place like this." She said, "But I don't want to live like this anymore." Thank you, God, because I would have never went back, right? I got exactly what I needed to know, that I needed to go there and carry an H&I message. It doesn't matter that I'm 47 years old and they're 13, 14, and 15, because it's the same disease. And I was 14 years old when I picked up for the first time. So guess what? I know what it feels like to use as an adolescent. I went there recently, and there was a girl there, and it was her birthday coming up, right? And I told her, "Well, we'll be back to see you around your birthday." And something came up, and I didn't go back for 2 months. And when I got there, she said, "You missed my birthday." And I was like, "Oh, yeah, I'm so sorry," right? Like, whoa. But, you know, like, feel like I could have went there sooner than the 2 months, right? Like that let me know that like what I'm doing does matter. Me going there into that facility does matter. And so the other place that I was doing H&I at is what Gordon said is at a facility. So it's interesting because that facility is very much different than the adolescent treatment facility, right? Different clientele, different demographics, socioeconomic status, things like that. But I'll tell you what, and I'm going to say it again, there's always an addict dying to hear the NA message, right? Doesn't matter. We come from all walks of life. The disease doesn't care where you came from, where you grew up, how great your parents were, or how disappointing your parents were, or if you didn't have parents, right? Like none of that matters. And so I've been able to carry this message into many different facilities. And I'll have a sponsee that I picked up almost 5 years ago at one of the facilities in Corpus. And I've been able to walk her through the steps and sponsor her for almost 5 years. Right? And there's been other times when we're like closing a meeting and someone will stand next to me and go, man, 60 days ago you carried a message into the facility I was at and thank you because it saved my life and I'm still here, right? Like I'm still here. 60 days later. 60 days, right? If you're new to Narcotics Anonymous, welcome. Welcome. Get involved. Be of service. There's been many times in my recovery that I've felt, I guess it's that sixth tradition, right? Less money, property, or prestige divert us from our primary purpose, right? Oh, I got some fancy letters behind my name now, right? I got a lot of education. I came in here broken and busted up. But today, you know, that was not too long ago. I was working at a fancy treatment facility. I got all them letters behind my name. I'm driving in my little sports car. My husband and I bought a house. And bitch, don't you know I'm somebody today? Right? Like, look at me. I've arrived. I'm too busy to go to that many meetings. There are times when we need a restoration to hope, just as we need a restoration to sanity. And the two may be closely related. Sometimes we can borrow someone else's faith when ours is lacking. Sometimes our empathy carries us through. Even when we don't have much hope for ourselves, we can still get excited for the member picking up a key tag or a medallion, or the addict experiencing new freedom and recovery. As we experience surprise, joy, and sometimes bitter disappointment, we learn the difference between hope and fantasy. Hope becomes more solid and more secure than our passing wishes or expectations. I share that just because it talks about like going through shifts and sometimes change in our life, right? And sometimes I got so disconnected that your hope carried me through, right? I felt like I don't need to do as much in Narcotics Anonymous. I already did that. I'm going to let the newcomer do that, right? But that's not how this thing works. Because when I'm of service, I get out of myself. And when I'm not in service, I'll tell you what, this thing is crazy. And I am all self-obsessed and self-absorbed, right? The selfishness of this disease, right? Self-centered. Narcotics Anonymous is the reason that I have a life today, is the reason that I have an education, is the reason that I have anything today. And for me to think that I did this or that I don't need this, that's my diseased thinking, right? And I'll let you know that there's no time in my life that I will ever go to a place where I'm not diseased. The disease of addiction lives with me. And I'm grateful for the program of recovery that I found in Narcotics Anonymous and the people that are in my lives today. I'm grateful for the H&I soldiers. I'm grateful for anyone that has ever carried an NA message into any facility. If you went once or 100 times or 1,000 times, thank you. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. There's another thing my husband always brings up, right? It's H&I, hospitals and institutions. He says, well, what about the hospitals? Because we sure do talk a lot about institutions, right? What are we doing to carry this message into hospitals where people are dying? My husband and I had an opportunity to carry a message into the hospital one time when there was an addict who had overdosed. That addict was found on a very cold morning in the Sonic parking lot. And somebody reached out and said, can you come to the hospital and share a message with this addict so that they can hopefully find a new way to live? That was the only time I ever went into a hospital, though. So I'm going to challenge each and every one of us that does H&I. What can we do to carry this message into more hospitals? Because I know that I overdosed several times and I walked out, as somebody else would say, in them paper shorts and that gown, right? Like that little paper gown, right? Like the moment I came to, I was ready to go. I had people bring me dope in the hospital, so I had enough energy to get out, right? Welcome to Narcotics Anonymous. Welcome. Keep coming back. We suggest you come back clean. I think I'm coming to the end of it. I just really wanted to say that H&I has been, it's been an honor to be able to be an H&I soldier. I love all the people that I have had the opportunity to do H&I with, right? It's awesome. I get to be on different panels with different people, and the experience is amazing. The bond is also like no other, right? It's like no other. Those of us that carry the H&I message, we know that bond that we share with other H&I soldiers. So I'm grateful. Thank you. Thank you for having me, and enjoy the rest of the convention.